I never expected to see a terrorist hug an American soldier, let alone an American soldier hugging him back. For as long as I could remember, terrorists had been the enemy. I was in second grade when I watched the Twin Towers collapse on the news. That year at recess, we played Seek and Destroy Bin Laden, digging holes in the gravel to search for his hiding place. I don't know what seven-year-old me would have done if he had actually found any terrorists, but hugging them never crossed my mind. I mused on these thoughts from the viewing gallery in Guantanamo Bay's makeshift courthouse. Years earlier, the Supreme Court held that the government could not deprive Guantanamo's detainees of certain constitutional rights. The result of that decision was to bring law students like myself to observe the due process provided to terrorists. I was assigned to observe and report on the trial of Abdal Rahim al-Nashiri, who was accused of bombing the USS Cole and murdering 17 American Navy sailors. With armed guards looking on, I watched the scene through triple pane glass. The soldier embracing Nashiri is one of his attorneys, a broad-shouldered man wearing a pristine white sailor's uniform, the same uniform worn by those Nashiri had killed. They spoke briefly before the Marine stationed in the corner of the room barked for us to rise. I stood at attention as the judge strode in and sat down, bringing the session to order. Nashiri's attorney squared up to the podium. "Your Honor, the defense moves to dismiss the case against Nashiri." He argued that the trial had been unfair to his client, noting that he was there to relitigate 4 years' worth of hearings because the previous judge was so biased and appellate court had to vacate every order he had given. More importantly, he argued, the defense team had been sabotaged by the government, which had concealed microphones and smoke detectors to eavesdrop on Nashiri's privileged conversations. Furthermore, he paused, lifted his hand for a moment, fingers pressed together, then let it drop to the podium. "Your Honor," he sighed, "I don't know how to proceed. The prosecution has prohibited the defense from using so many words that I do not believe I can describe the matter further in court." I later learned that a court order prevented Nashiri's defense team from discussing sensitive matters in great detail in hearings. Ostensibly, these rules protected national security matters. More likely, though, they were used to prohibit discussions of torture. Torture. It was nearly synonymous with Guantanamo Bay. It was the word not spoken in every oral argument and not written in every brief. Because discussing torture wasn't allowed in court, it wasn't until later that I learned about the detainees' beatings and waterboarding, about forced nudity, sleep deprivation, confinement to insect-infested coffins, head bashing, water dowsing, and even object rape. I also learned that torturers would stage rescues, then increase the torture if detainees cooperated with their pretended liberators. Perhaps this is what had prompted Nashiri to ask whether he would be tortured again before he could trust his attorneys. In response, the judge had simply said, "I can't promise you the United States won't torture you again." I can't promise you the United States won't torture you again. Those words ran through my head as I sat in the officers' club later that night, the condensation from my drink slipping down my glass in the humid air. The defense team sat across the table from me, sporting casual shorts and open-collared shirts instead of their uniforms. Despite the light and breezy mood, my thoughts were heavy. For the past 2 years, I had studied the American legal system, drinking in notions of liberty, dignity, justice, and due process. I considered myself a legal disciple, converted to the ideals preached behind podiums and celebrated in casebooks. But here I was in the real world, hearing the courts themselves speak of the treachery, discrimination, and bias in the system. But then again, the smoke from the memory of 9/11 filled my mind. If ever rules should be stretched, shouldn't it be for terrorists? But then again, what if Nashiri didn't do it? The thought plagued me. Nashiri didn't pray, dress, groom, or worship like the others. He was a clear outlier and an outcast of the other terrorist leaders. And the prosecution had only shown itself to be corrupt in his trial. What if he was just someone caught up in the movement who fit the description? Not the mastermind, but a pawn. My mind traveled back 10 years earlier to another man who would fit a description. My father, chained to a Denver police station desk. For hours, the police falsely accused, interrogated, threatened, and lied to my father. They wanted to arrest a thief, and he looked the part. Vulnerable and victimized, he was at the complete mercy of the system. If not for the defense attorney who took his case and proved his innocence, we could have lost everything. I looked down the table at the attorney who had embraced Nasri that morning. I may never know the extent of Nasri's guilt or innocence, but I silently thanked his attorney for defending Nasri's right to a fair trial and humane detention. By defending a terrorist, he was also defending the best of America.